Welcome to NucleCast, the official podcast of the NY Deterrence Center. Our host is Dr. Adam Laufer, co-founder and vice president for research at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. The NY Deterrence Center is a 501c3 organization ensuring a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrence and its ongoing modernization. Thank you for listening and welcome to the show. The views of the host and the guests are their own.
Welcome back to another great episode of NucleCast. Of course, I'm your host, Adam Lowther. And today we have James Ragland, who, you know, he's a mainstay at the Defense Nuclear Weapons School in Albuquerque. I mean, he teaches, he's been there for, what, a decade and a half, I think, Rags?
Over 20 years now.
Yeah, 20 years. Okay, so I've known him a decade and a half, but he's been there over 20 years. He's designed courses. He's taught courses. He's sort of one of the senior folks at DNWS. And, you know, I had asked Rags. Rags is, of course, a friend of mine. And I said, you know, Rags, we've never had a discussion of DITRA, the Defense Threat Reduction Agency's schoolhouse, the Defense Nuclear Weapons School, that is, of course, in Albuquerque. And given that many NucleCast listeners are, you know, either active duty military, civil servants, the, you know, lab folks who all are eligible to attend the courses at DNWS. I said, Rags, why don't you come on and talk about DNWS? It's kind of a hidden gem in the Department of Defense, and, you know, tell us a little bit about its history and then tell us about some of the courses. I know which ones are my favorite and which ones I most enjoy. But I thought Rags could you know, tell our listeners sort of who is DNWS and what do you do? And so thanks for coming on to do that.
Yes, thanks for the invite. I appreciate it, Adam.
So kick us off by telling us about the history of DNWS and sort of what does it do and what is its mission?
Yeah, so the Defense Nuclear Weapons School is actually tied to the Manhattan Engineer District, which became the Manhattan Project. And in 1947, it was actually formalized as the Armed Forces Special Weapons Project, in which they took upon the role of educating people in the new weapon systems, the nuclear weapons that were used in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, which were ostensibly revolutions in military affairs. So we had to figure out how to think about nuclear weapons. And we had to teach people how to maintain nuclear weapons. And we had to begin to understand nuclear weapons effects. So there was definitely a learning curve for us to encapsulate what this nuclear revolution meant for the United States and writ large the world now today. So 1947, the schoolhouse was more or less stood up. It's gone through a bunch of changes throughout our nuclear history, most of which is in our rearview mirror, obviously. In 1998, we became part of the Defense Threat Reduction Agency, which is an agency, a DOD entity that is charged with preparing people to deal with countering weapons of mass destruction, which arguably nuclear weapons definitely falls within that realm.
Yeah, and so you're in Albuquerque. Have you been there the whole time? Is that where the schoolhouse has been, or has it moved around?
The schoolhouse has been where it's at now in Albuquerque the whole time. Back in the day when it first started, it was actually a Sandia base and eventually became Kirtland Air Force Base. And we're co-located with Sandia National Laboratories. And we have a large footprint there at the schoolhouse with a large auditorium style classrooms and a museum I'll talk about a little bit later on in our podcast.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm glad you mentioned the museum because you really have the most fabulous. And it's, you know, it's a classified museum, so it's not one that just anybody can go into. But for those that, you know, are cleared, you can go see, you know, all of our previous nuclear weapons. And Rags will walk you through it and tell you all about it. So that's even better part of it. So tell us a little more about, you know, we've kind of talked about its history. I didn't realize it was, you know, dated back to 1947. So that's new for me. Has the mission of the schoolhouse changed over time?
Yeah, prior to 9/11, you know, that watershed event in our national security, it was focused more or less on Cold War era nuclear weapons topics and dealing primarily, obviously, the Soviet Union and to some extent China problems that we had. And after 9/11, we had to shift focus to new asymmetric threats for that time period of 2001 of dealing with terrorists and rogue nations and started broadening our aperture to deal with other threats. And that's when we really started rolling in some weapons of mass destruction training within the schoolhouse.
So tell me and our listeners about, you know, the types of classes, you know, give us a sense of, you know, who are your students, you know, what does it take to come to, you know, to come to a course and, you know, how long are the courses? Sort of tell us that kind of information.
Okay. I'll do the reverse engineer of this. Typically, our students are from within the nuclear enterprise, either DOD or DOE affiliated. National labs fall under DOE and NSA. And obviously, the DOD, our nuclear mission, maintaining the nuclear triad and other systems. That's most of our students. I'd say 90% of the students fall within that. However, there's a small fraction of our students that could be local law enforcement, state law enforcement, that come out and visit us. And every now and again, our friends and allies do visit with us. And I'm thinking about this discussion, Adam, I was trying to think of some of the more unique students we had because I expected this question. we actually had a gentleman for the New York City Police Department. And he got the proper clearances, which for Department of Defense, it's SRD/SNWDI, Critical Nuclear Weapons Design Information, or for the DOE, typically a Q clearance will suffice. And he got the proper clearances because of the job he was doing, which I'm not sure what it was, but he actually came to one of our classified nuclear weapons classes. So if you have the clearances, which is determined by your need to know, and that's your business with your entity that you work for, you give that to DITRA and they run it through the gonculator, if you will, to approve you. And you come out and visit us and hang out in the class with us.
So tell us sort of, give us a rundown of the types of classes. How long are they? And, you know, some of that information.
Yeah. So I think the shortest class we have is a day and a half, 2 days. And the longest class we have is 2 weeks. Typically, there are exceptions, but those are specialized training for different units within our DOD, Department of Defense. But the types of classes we have our nuclear weapons classes. Of course, that's where my focus is in my particular division. And one of the flagship courses we have is something called the Nuclear Weapons Orientation Course, which is where we met many years ago. And that's kind of the soup to nuts class. It's our Nuclear 100 class, right? 100 level class, where we'll have everything from an admin assistant to somebody in the nuclear enterprise, to comptrollers, to weapons designers from Lawrence Livermore National Labs. And they'll come hang out with us for a week, and we start off with basic sciences. And by the time we get to the fifth day, we're talking about nuclear proliferation and current threats and things of that nature. We also have something called the Joint DOD-DOE Surety Executive Course. Make sure I get that right. It's a senior level course that was mandated by Sidney Drell back in the 1980s to fill a training gap within senior leadership that were coming into the nuclear enterprise as a senior leader without much of a knowledge of the foundation of nuclear programs and surety, safety, and all. So we have a course that we host that deals with that. And another course that I think is one of our most popular courses is the nuclear policy course, which is something that Doc Lowther helps out with all the time. And what we do is we start off 4.5 days, and we start off with a discussion on Cold War history and nuclear deterrence. And we go through this training where we have SMEs from across the enterprise come out and talk to us about everything from NATO nuclear operations to current issues with China, maybe extended deterrence. And we bring out senior people to talk about nuclear policy, and we end on whatever the current administration's nuclear policy happens to be. So that's probably one of our highest priority classes right now, especially with the change of administration.
So my favorite course, and I think I've probably mentioned this in the past, is, of course, TNOC, because it was TNOC that opened my eyes to the importance of low-yield nuclear weapons and just how we can shape weapons effects. It's something I had never thought about until I took that course and started doing weapons calculations and weapons effects calculations. talk to me a little bit about that specific course.
Yeah, that's a specialized course, the Theater Nuclear Operations course. Now the Army runs it out of USANCA. We hosted it. I managed it for a number of years at the schoolhouse. And it's just that, Adam. It's a taking applicable weapons yields and figuring out how to apply nuclear weapons to solve particular problems. If I'm being vague, it's understandable why I have to be vague. But it's the only course like that in the nation's nuclear literacy chain, if you will. And it's become quite in demand, where they've increased the student throughput significantly in TNOC just because of that unique skill set that you get by attending that particular course.
Yeah, it really is, an eye-opening course. Now, I do wonder, I know there's, you know, I'm familiar with nuke policy and nuclear weapons orientation and TNOC, and but tell me about some of the other courses that are there that sometimes folks may not necessarily know about. What are those other courses?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. One of our other flagship courses, it's tied to the origin of the schoolhouse, the Nuclear Emergency Team Operations course. And that is a two-week course in which we bring out potential responders, or our students, typically military members, either Marine Corps Seaburn officers or Seaburn troops, rather, Air Force bioenvironmental engineers or Air Force emergency managers, sometimes contractors and civilian counterparts. And in 2 weeks, we start them off with basic discussion on what an atom is, not Adam Lowther, but an atom, protons, neutrons, electrons. And we go through all the evolution of learning health physics, which is the radiation sciences, if you will. And by the end of the course, they will have learned how to use radiation detector equipment to go out and solve complex radiological environments that are a result of a nuclear weapons accident. So we mitigate that nuclear weapons accident. And the second week of this particular course, we spend it all out in the field using radiological sources, creating different radiological environments that will simulate what would happen if something were to go wrong in the transportation of a nuclear device. And learning all these skill sets in those 2 weeks, we will have taught them how to solve other radiological problems. So it's really a crawl, walk, run type of course, where you start off at the very beginning, and by the ninth day of training, these troops are out there just solving problems. It's pretty amazing to watch what they do.
Yeah, that is a course I've never taken, but it does sound like, you know, it's sort of that classroom meets hands-on learning.
Absolutely.
You know, kind of the best of both worlds.
Yeah, it's a really fun course. And the follow-on course to that is a nuclear weapons incident response techniques course, NWIRT. And what we do is NetOps will teach you how to solve the problem, use instruments, and go out there and solve the problem at hand on site. NWIRT will actually give the skills necessary to command and control and effectively communicate as that response is going on. So NWIRT is a course that's mandated by the Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff, and we do this course constantly throughout the year to different entities. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, those do sound like a couple of interesting classes to take. Who specifically, first responders, can just anybody take any of your classes? Or, I mean, need to know, but how hard is it to sort of get qualified or to go take a class?
So with the NetOps, we don't necessarily get too many people outside of our nuclear enterprise. With the NWIRT, when we go out to different locations, we'll invite local responders, and the FBI helps out with the course. It's actually, it's a program in which we have the interagency involved in that particular course, where we try to have that unified command perspective, and we use that for the training. So these entities in the response community, which there's many of them, they get a chance to look at each other and talk and discuss and network and hopefully flesh out any communication issues that may arise before an event happens. So NWIRT's really a collaborative entity. The NWS does not own the course. We're just a part of the bigger program for NWIRT.
So what other courses, you know, we've talked about a handful, but what are some of the ones that we might not have talked about that folks also may not be aware of?
Yeah, so hopefully we have some nerds out there listening to this, and they said health physics. I like that stuff, and we have the Applied Radiological Response Techniques course. It's called ART2, and we have a health physics branch, and it's a mixture of military and contractors, and eventually a civilian, and they're the HPs of the schoolhouse, so they're the ones that understand the science of radiological detection and measurement and problem solving better than most, right? So their week-long ART2 course is probably the best DoD course in which you will, by the end of the course, understand how your instrumentation detects, measures, identifies a radiological environment, and how do you mitigate that environment to ensure the safety of the public or the responders, whatever the case may be. So that's a brilliant course, that ART2 course.
Yeah. Now, the one thing that we haven't really talked about that we mentioned early on is, of course, the museum. Yeah. But before we go and talk about the museum, it's that time in the show where we have to take a quick break. So we're going to do that. And when we get back, Rags is going to give us a virtual tour, sort of, not really, but sort of a virtual tour of the NWIM. And so you're listening to NucleCast, and we'll be right back.
This episode of NucleCast is brought to you by the Amlaw Deterrence Center, whose mission is to educate Americans about the nuclear enterprise and strategic deterrence.
And we're back, and we're talking to James Ragland from the Defense Nuclear Weapons School. And Rags, you were going to give us a tour and a talk about the NWIM.
Yeah, so the Nuclear Weapons and Structural Museum is a unique asset within our nation. It's actually truly a treasure. I know Adam's been in there a couple of times with me. We have a display, probably greater than 10,000 square feet, that covers most everything that's ever been on our stockpile. And we give multiple tours in there. It's classified, so I got to be careful what I say. But we give multiple tours. We'll give technical tours for new weapons designers. How do these things, how are they designed? How do they work? We will give G-Wiz tours, just, you know, kind of a petting zoo, if you will. And we'll also give policy tours inside that Nuclear Weapons Instructional Museum. And the tours can range from 2 hours, or if you get back there with a couple of guys like me and a few others, we'll spend 6 hours back there just walking through every single weapon system and the unique attributes, what worked, what didn't. And I usually try to drag along a discussion of the nuclear policy that these particular weapons supported, and different concepts in deterrence theory. What goals were we after with particular weapon systems?
Yeah. Would you say for the school, what would you say are the most important? How are you, you know, when you're ultimately a component of DITRA. And so as you think about how you fit into the DITRA mission, what is the sort of the most important thing for you guys to do, and sort of your biggest contribution?
Yeah, so I think the most important contribution of the school as in totality is we do definitely increase the nuclear IQ of our nuclear enterprise. And this is something that was identified in most of the NPRs, as you know, that there's an atrophy of our intellectual base because people are retiring and leaving the community. And there's very few spots where you can go and learn just about everything you need to know about the enterprise within our government. And our schoolhouse happens to be one. So at the same time, Adam may be teaching his China course in our nuclear policy class. Down the hall in our same schoolhouse, our explosive ordnance disposal team may be teaching one of their specialized classes that really can't discuss, but they're doing EOD stuff. And at the same time that is happening, we may have our health physics team teaching that ART2 class that I just spoke to you about. And maybe there's a tour going on at the same time. And Adam's been there when it's busy. We'll have 4 or 5 different events going on at the same time, all in one spot, one location at Kirtland Air Force Base. And I think that's the most unique asset, attribute of the schoolhouse, and supporting that countering of weapons mass destruction mission set that DITRA is responsible for.
Yeah, you know, and it's kind of the perfect location because, you know, you're on Kirtland and, you know, Sandia is right there. So you have access to a lot of Sandians. And then, you know, Los Alamos is, you know, a little over an hour and a half away. And so if you need folks from the Hill to come down and talk, because, you know, it's one of the places where, like in your class, I found interesting because you've got a very strong background and worked with a lot of designers and, you know, who have been there for numerous tests out in the Nevada desert. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, I came along in the early 90s. So in that, you know, I was coming into the Navy when nuclear weapons were leaving, you know, ships. And so, you know, I missed most of that. Whereas, you know, you have a lot of folks who can tell us, and this is one of your strengths, is sort of the Army's history with nuclear weapons. And so there's a lot of historical depth there that I've always found, you know, informative and insightful that, you know, you just don't get other places. Now, if you were, you know, to be sort of king for a day, and you were to do anything you wanted, and you know, I haven't brought out Bob the Genie yet, so don't make this one of your three wishes, because you're going to get to make your wishes with Bob the Genie. But, you know, what kind of, what would you do with DNWS? Would you want to increase its, you know, just sort of the exposure it has so that people across the enterprise know that it's there and see it for its, you know, what it can provide? Or, you know, what would you do?
Well, I think you might have read my mind on that. And that's one of the reasons why I'm here with you today, is I want people to understand what the Defense Nuclear Weapons School brings to our nuclear enterprise. And it's that unique blend of training that covers so many different aspects. And, you know, one of the things I didn't bring up about what we do at the schoolhouse, and you touched on just a bit, is if we don't have an answer, we'll go out and find the SME that actually did that particular operation of that test, whatever it may be, and we'll get you an answer. And quite frequently, we bring in people that are just that. They're the SME in their topic, or maybe this has happened, I won't name drop, but we've brought in the people that, you know, help write NPRs and help write particular strategies and documents. And we will bring those people out to help us out. And I don't think I would change much more than the marketing. And that's something that's, you know, you can't say too much. We're in the nuclear business, as we know. We can't say everything we do, but we need to say enough to where people know they need to come out. And I can tell you, business is good. We see, on average, well over 2,000 students in our classes, and another 3,000 plus students, guests come through our museum per year. So that's wow. Low bidding, it's 5,000 people per year. That's pretty amazing with a staff of approximately maybe 70 people total in the schoolhouse.
Now, so, do you guys ever do road shows and go out and teach courses on the road? I mean,
yeah, most of our courses do have a roadshow version, and we'll get a particular request from a unit, and we'll filter it to make sure it's appropriate for us to do. And we have a nuclear weapons orientation course I spoke about. We have a 3-day version we take on the road 4 to 10 times a year. Nuke Paul, we take on the road once in a while. You know, U.S. STRATCOM is a popular customer for us. Many of our response courses, they will go out to particular units to give them training organic to their environment. So we do a lot of road shows per year.
Yeah. Now, I guess it is about that time where I'm going to bring out Bob the Genie. Uh-oh. And so as I rub my magic lamp, of course, as I've told everyone before, you know, Bob grants all guests 3 wishes so long as they, you know, wish for things related to the podcast as opposed to wealth or health or anything like that. So with that in mind, Rags, what is your first wish?
I guess my first wish is we continue to push that bar of raising our nuclear education, IQ, literacy, whatever you want to call it, so we can rebuild some of the competencies that we lost over years. And we've done much better. There's still a lot of work to be done. And as we change administrations, new doctrine's going to come out. Hopefully we keep getting better and better at what we're doing.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this the other day, and as you just sort of sit down and kind of do the rough math, Air Force Global Strike Command has about 30,000-ish folks in it. You know, the Navy has about half as many in the submarine community. If you look at the labs and the DOE component, NNSA has somewhere approaching 75,000 to 100,000. Plus, if you look at the staffs, you look at STRATCOMs, a few thousand, and then, You know, you look at the contractor community, you know, we're looking at somewhere around 150,000. Then let's, you know, I know this is less relevant specifically to DNWS, but if you look at the contractors that are building, you know, Sentinel and B-21, and let's suppose you want to have those engineers who are, you know, focused on very specific components of that, and you want to keep them engaged and energized and sort of help them understand the much, much bigger mission that they're contributing to. There's hundreds of thousands of people across the nuclear enterprise that we want to understand the importance of the mission that in any of our small ways that we contribute to. And so whenever you know, you hit 5,000 students a year, I mean, that's a big number, but in the grand scheme of things, it's a small portion of the folks that are, you know, across that enterprise in any given year.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now let's move on to wish number two. So we've already increased the awareness, and we're, you know, Bob the Genie's going to help us, you know, educate more and do it better. So now what's your second wish?
Yeah, this is more challenging than I thought it would be. I think the concepts of nuclear deterrence, right? And this is something that both me and you are very passionate about. My wish is I can communicate effectively to all our students when they come through the schoolhouse in any course and whatever job they fill in the nuclear enterprise, they are important to the enterprise, whether it's the weapons scientist from Los Alamos National Laboratory or a budget analyst from NNSA. They all contribute to this esoteric concept of nuclear deterrence. And nuclear deterrence, even though technically you can't prove a negative, we can say has kept the peace, relative peace, at least since the conclusion of World War II. And understanding that, all those people you spoke about, Adam, tens of thousands of people, they understand what they're actually working towards. It builds up that nuclear culture that, as you have studied and I have studied, that Curtis LeMay culture of Strategic Air Command, in which peace is our profession and the alternative is destruction, right? So we're back in an environment, I think, now with our peer adversaries, and we have to take this threat seriously. And with the asymmetric threats of less than peer adversaries, it's a serious business right now. We need to be ahead of the curve. And I think if I can accomplish that with the team I work with, all my colleagues at the schoolhouse, I think we've done a lot. And that's kind of a weird wish to have, but I think it's one I'm passionate about.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's sort of why I do what I do, is because we want people to understand both the threat and then how deterrence, you know, deters great power war, right? I mean, this is sort of the fundamental reason that we advocate for a nuclear enterprise and a nuclear arsenal, is because we fundamentally believe that nuclear weapons stop great power wars and then, you know, wars between our allies and their adversaries, which have tamped down conflict to the point that, you know, I wrote an article less than a year ago, and I said, hey, listen, global warming as a problem is the fault of nuclear weapons, because the human population has tripled in 70 years, which is historically not how fast the human population grows. But because we're fighting so many fewer wars that are killing so many tens of millions of fewer people, that's allowed the population to grow. And of course, every human being is a little carbon emitter. And therefore, you know, we're seeing global warming because of nuclear weapons and the fact that it saved tens of millions of lives. Now, my effort to be sort of, you know, funny about it, I don't know if it went over that well, but we fundamentally believe in, you know, this idea that nuclear weapons prevent conflict, which therefore saves lives and saves money and, you know, brings about tremendous good in the world. And so, you know, that's why we do what we do.
Absolutely.
Okay. So your final wish, your third wish.
Wow. This is a tough one too. Like I said, we didn't talk before this. We didn't prep. So I'm just kind of swinging here. And I think a wish, a legitimate wish, is to reduce the political polarization within the nation, but within our enterprise. And by that, I mean, Global Zero is not the right answer. Maximum buildup to over 32,000 weapons is not the answer either, right? So there's a happy medium of strategic objectives, stockpile composition, arms control efforts, and international collaboration. We have to do this by reducing the polarization here in the nation first before we can have successful efforts. And overall, by achieving that, I think we will see, when we look in the rearview mirror 10 years from now, if we get to that point, we will see an overall risk reduction, right? And DITRA is all about risk reduction. I'm about risk reduction. You're about risk reduction. Let's reduce the risk to us as an entity out there by trying to find some harmony. But it starts here at home. We have to find some way to get better at being moderate with each other. And I think a lot of us think that same way.
Yeah, it's almost, it's interesting talking about nuclear weapons because no other sort of military capability engenders almost a, it's almost like a fundamental religious belief about a tool, a weapon system. And really, nuclear weapons are the only one that sort of can engender that. It's almost, in many respects, if you want to pick, abortion or gay marriage or, those like sort of really hot topics that people are passionate about, then just throw nuclear weapons into that bucket and, mix it together. And you've got a challenging topic to sort of have, a balanced discussion on. So I'm with you on that. It would be great if we could sort of remove all the, I don't want to say passion per se, but sort of the emotion of it and just think sort of logically about what's the best move and best approach, for the nation to take.
I absolutely agree. And it's going to take intellectual effort and discipline to get there.
Now, as we conclude the show, if you're going to give sort of your elevator pitch as you, walk out the door to all of our listeners, what is that elevator pitch?
I guess the focus of this discussion is the Defense Nuclear Weapons School. I don't want to limit it to that. There's a lot of education opportunities out there within our enterprise. I will say, I think we do it the best, but there's a lot of people out there who do a lot of this education in the nuclear weapons world, whether it's response, weapons fundamentals, design, whatever the case may be. Exploit those educational opportunities and have your troops and your subordinates and your superiors take them along this journey and through the Air Force Institute of Technology, and events like this, the National Institute. Our deterrence, NIDS, all these entities out there are designed to just bring that IQ up so we can be more literate in these topics. And we're going through a revolution right now. We have human capital reasons. People are leaving the business. There's very few people out there that have ever seen a nuclear weapons test. And me and Adam probably only know a few people that have participated in nuclear weapons tests. There's only a couple out there. We just have to be cognizant of that and just keep pushing this bar forward.
Yeah, I mean, the whole reason that, ANWA, the host of this podcast, exists is because there was a need to have folks in D.C. and, to have live events that were, in many respects, educational to do exactly what you're talking about. I mean, that's the whole reason ANWA exists. And so it's, there's very clearly an understanding, I think, for those within the enterprise that we need to expand and increase the sort of that base level knowledge. And so there's a, you and me and others are out there trying to make that happen. And it's just, it's a worthwhile endeavor, and I'm glad you and I are out there doing it.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, Adam.
All right. Well, James Ragland, thanks for joining us on NucleCast.
Awesome. Have a good day, Adam.
And thanks to you, the listeners, for joining us on this episode. And we'll see you next time. So the long story short of our discussion is, if you're eligible, you got to go take a course with DNWS. It's, they got a lot of great courses. I think RAG's covered, and get a tour of the NWIM with RAG's. And, you can look at, the actual weapons. Of course, they're not live weapons, but you can see the weapons, you can see the cutaways, it's a great tour. So DNWS, Albuquerque, New Mexico, reach out to RAG's. He's on the global, and have a great tour. and a great class.
This has been a production of the Anwa Deterrence Center, a 501c3 that seeks to educate key decision makers, stakeholders, and the public to ensure a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent. Our executive producer is Kimberly Charrington, and this episode has been engineered and mixed by David Krunkel. Help us grow our followers by sharing it and follow the show on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at NuclearCast.